And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report Podcast. We're back. It's a new year, new you, new crew, same mediocre podcast. Bart Logan with you. We've got Sam Fahmy with us. Sam, how you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic.
Hey, good to hear. And Alex Stanek. Alex, how are you, sir?
Oh, I couldn't be better. As crappy as 2018 is, 2019 is just as good. The absolute reverse, so. Two thumbs way up.
Absolutely, yeah. And Happy New Year's to both of you. And it has been, at least, you know, if these first few days of 2019 are any indication, it will be a very, very different year for Columbus Crew. Columbus Crew fans, a lot less maybe stressful. I guess we'll get right into it. When we last recorded, you know, back in 2018, we talked about, you know, the saving of the crew and how that happened, but it became, you know, really became official. They dotted the I's, crossed the T's, whatever, you know, stupid analogies you want to use. But last week, with the official, you know, announcement reveal of the ownership, MLS, Don Garber showing up here in Columbus. It was wonderful, wonderful to kind of watch and follow. Alex and Sam, either of you at that event?
I was there, of course, covering it for Massive Report.
So you guys want to just share some insights there with Dee Haslam, Pete Edwards, our new coaching staff, and then president as well, Tim Bezbachenko, and then Caleb Porter revealed. We'll get into those guys a little bit more. But what was that experience like there at Premier Nova, I believe? Pretty nice digs, eh?
Ooh, Premier Nova was very nice.
Oh, yeah.
And that was if you pick a venue to talk about a place that or something that involves the city of Columbus, I think Maranova was definitely the good choice to have it up there. It's a very nice place with a very nice view of the skyline. If it wasn't cloudy and dreary and snowy, it would have been even more perfect for considering what it was being announced in that room. But in the great scheme of things, honestly, it was really interesting and it was really weird. There's a lot of faces that I knew. There was a lot of faces that I didn't know. And come to realize there was a lot of Brown staff that did come down to this event to meet and greet with the crew staff, which was kind of cool. But lots of former players, lots of Save the Crew members, some season ticket holders that came as representatives of season ticket holders. Lots of media. There was more media than I have probably ever seen for a crew announcement. Now, of course, it doesn't hurt that ESPN's own Taylor Twellman was the MC. It doesn't hurt that Don Garber, the commissioner of the league, was there, loved or hated. It doesn't hurt that you have some big names like Tim Bezbachenko and Caleb Porter and the Haslams and the Edwards and Mayor Ginther and Alex Fisher. Everybody, it was the who's who of
the new everybody. Crew.
Of the new crew, exactly. Mayor Ginther had a few remarks. Alec Fisher had a few remarks. Obviously, Don Garber. Taylor Twellman. You can tell when Don Garber was speaking that the Crew fans, and especially the SDC, the Save the Crew people, were trying to be as nice as possible and not boo him. Even when Taylor Twellman was speaking, sometimes they were trying really hard to not boo. And that was good. But it was a very top-notch event. And, you know, you got what you had hoped for. I was talking with Neil Sika, and I said, you know, this time last year, this team was probably about 95% gone. And this is not where I would have expected us to be today. So that was a very good, it was a very good event. Let's see what else. Oh yeah. And then media availability after that was even better, because we got to talk to, you know, as you've seen on Massive Report, the site, there's a lot of breakdown of what was said by D. Haslam. There were some very significant things said there by Dr. Edwards. There was obviously some significance there by Caleb Porter, by Tim Bezpachenko. The one really big thing that stands out to me is how well-liked and well-respected Tim Bezpachenko is by the league, because he used to work in league offices, and Don Garber spoke volumes of him. The other thing is, like, if Don Garber could hire Alex Fisher to work for Major League Soccer right now at this very moment, he would probably do it, because the number of times that he praised Alex Fisher's efforts in getting things together and really putting in the quarterbacking effort in order to get this deal done was quite often. He probably said his name, you know, 5, 6, 7 times just in the post media scrum. You know, Caleb Porter is coming in. He's looking at a team that has made the playoffs, what is it, 4 out of the last 5 years. And so is Tim Bezpachenko. And D. Haslam and Dr. Pete Edwards are looking at how they make this team more involved in the community, as opposed to the last 5 years where this team kind of moved away from the community. If you get a chance, go on to Steve Cirque's website, which is, I believe it's called CirqueBook.com, and read the player reactions. And a line that really stands out from what was said is by Gino Padula, who said, I've been more involved with the team in the last 2 months than I've ever been involved in the last 5 years. And I think that might be an indication of some of the things to come in how the team involves former players in the club and in the institution that is now not just a Columbus asset. I mean, primarily a Columbus asset, but also becoming an even bigger. Man, I don't even know how to explain it, to be honest. It's just, it's going to be really interesting to see, but I have a feeling it's going to be really, really good, and it's going to be very different than anything we have experienced before, possibly even including during the Lamar Hunt days.
Well, and it's such a stark contrast, Alex, to kind of what we see. And we're not going to, you know, dwell on the previous regime too much. But when you look at the level of involvement we've seen from D. Haslam and Pete Edwards, who are at least it appears are going to be really the two kind of driving forces from the ownership side that people are going to be seeing most often. You know, you're already seeing them more than we saw Anthony Precourt. And then you look at both of those, you know, big team personnel decisions, both Tim Bezpachenko bringing back a guy with Columbus roots, but also a track record of success in MLS, previously with Toronto FC, you know, really led that organization to a historic MLS season, historic success, and oversaw a lot of, you know, everything there on the player operations side, acquiring the likes of Gianvinco, Jozy Altidore, say what you will, they got an MLS Cup out of it. And then, of course, Caleb Porter, another person who got an MLS Cup at the expense of the Columbus Crew, but also a guy with Ohio ties, and big names here, and that not to take anything away from Greg Berhalter, but wasn't, you know, quite a known quantity when the crew brought him in. And you can see immediately these are big names that Dee Haslam, Pete Edwards, the ownership group have brought in, but people that aren't just big names with ties to the city.
Well, and absolutely, and I think that even if you kind of put the big names aside, if you would have gone back in time to even before Precourt tried to move the team, and you would have just said, what is your dream ownership group look like? You know, what I would have said is a local owner with a lot of money. That's what I would have said. I think that we actually have something better than that in the Edwards-Haslam partnership. You have a local owner who has not only local ties, but has crew ties going back to the very beginning of the team. This is someone who is deeply ingrained in the organization from the minute it started. And then you have money coming from not only the Edwards family, but also the Haslams. And on top of all that, you have a wealth of knowledge in Cleveland, Ohio on how to run a top-notch mm-hmm. sports business. The NFL is the biggest game in town in terms of sports. Not just in America, but arguably in the world. They have more money than anybody else. It's crazy. They get all the top people because they can pay them the most. And they have consistently put butts in seats for a team that does not deserve to have butts in seats up until Baker Mayfield was drafted. You know, as a long-suffering Browns fan, you know, this is an organization that was incredibly successful at, you know, keeping the fans interested, even when times were tough. And, you know, they're in a rebuilding phase now. I think most Browns fans are pretty optimistic about the way things are going. Hopefully the crew can have a similar kind of rebirth. We need a Baker Mayfield is what I'm saying. But in all seriousness, I am so happy with the ownership group. And speaking about the, you know, the prior ownership, I always got along with Anthony Precourt. I always got along with Andy Loughnane. They were always very nice to me. It was tough to get a hold of Anthony Precourt, especially. I know that, you know, we would hope to maybe get one interview a year with him. He wasn't in town that often. It was sometimes tough. And, you know, it was tough to even see him. You know, even when he was in town, I would sometimes want to have some, you know, have something to say to him. And unless he came by Nordeca, I wasn't going to see him. He was up in a box somewhere. He would come in for some meetings. He would leave town. Nobody would even, you know, catch sight of him. I think we're going to get sick of seeing Dr. Edwards and Dee Haslam, to be totally honest with you. These guys are going to be around all the time. We got local people. I mean, getting a hold of Pete Edwards is like, you know, he's 15 minutes away from the stadium. If we want to have him on for a podcast, we could probably just ring him up and be like, hey, what are you doing tonight, Pete? It's a dream come true. And I'm so happy to have them. And I'm so happy to have the wealth of knowledge they're going to bring to our organization. The people that they've brought in so far have exceeded my expectations. I think Caleb Porter's a great pick. I would have loved to see Greg Berhalter continue, but, you know, it's hard to turn down the national team.
Yeah.
I don't blame him in the slightest for leaving. And Caleb Porter is the next best thing, and he's somebody who can really build on the foundation that the Edwards and Haslam families are going to put in place. Tim Bezbachenko, you know, one of the best GMs in the league, in the history of the league. He turned TFC from a constant joke. I mean, we would make fun mm-hmm. of TFC every year because they never made the playoffs before he was there. They would spend like crazy and never get anything done. It was just, they were a fun team to make fun of. You know, they had D-Row and they had all these players who, you know, should have been producing and they didn't. You know, they would always get super close and fall apart. You know, sometimes they would just fall apart from the start and never get close. And he turned them into a team that you fear a little bit, not just Columbus, but I think most teams kind of look at that TFC match and they're like, oh, we could drop points there. He can bring that same kind of tenacity to the crew, and he's going to sign, you know, important players for us. I'm curious to see what direction they're going to go, because when he was in TFC, the way that you would build a team is you would kind of get a bunch of average MLS players, maybe above average players. You'd still try to get, you know, value for money. But then you would have your DP slots and you would just throw cash at, you know, players who are in their late 20s, early 30s, maybe a little bit past it, but recognizable known quantities. You would get your Sebastian Giovinco's when they're 28. You'd get your Michael Bradley's, your Josie Altidore's when they're, you know, just kind of getting across the 30 line. And then you would basically have them ride out their careers in your city. I'm not sure that's what is going to happen in Columbus. I think that it's quite possible that you're going to see more teams emulate the Atlanta model, where you get somebody who's a lot younger, who's on the upswing rather than on the downswing, someone who's not necessarily a known quantity, but is known to people who follow the sport very closely as a, you know, a top prospect in the game. And then you hope to develop them into a top level player and sell them on. I think that's probably what we're going to see from this ownership group. It has worked for Atlanta, obviously. and I think it'll work for us too. I really trust Bezpachenko and Porter. I think that's going to be a great team, great partnership. And with the money that the Haslams and the Edwards are going to kind of infuse into our program, I think the sky's the limit. I am so, so thrilled. There's nothing more I could ask for.
Well, and to kind of that point that you're hitting on, that, you know, the Giovincos and the, you know, Michael Bradley kind of aside, but with Giovinco and even with Jozy Altidore, I mean, they're getting guys that, you know, 26 and 28, and at the time when they acquired both of those guys, so yeah, they broke into the bank to get those guys. They spent money, but, you know, contrasting that with the, you know, the NYCFCs or LA Galaxy, when, you know, they're bringing in washed up Steven Gerrard or Pirlo, or just spending on names to, again, underscore your point, getting guys that, yeah, they're going to spend dollars on, but still get good years out of them. They might not be able to sell them for as much, but they're still getting quality years in their prime, and they're producing in the league. You really can't argue, and you look at what Toronto's done, you know, last year as an exception. They've done a lot, and Bezpachenko, it's exciting, and yeah, we'll see what they do in terms of, I still think that we're going to have some changes to the roster, you know, between now and opening day. But it's thrilling. And then again, to get a guy like Caleb Porter, who's got the Ohio ties, who's had success in MLS, and you know that they must have, you know, spent some good money to get him too. We were talking, you know, last time we recorded about him being courted by LA and taking in Lakers games, you know, in the front row. And I mean, who would have, you know, thought, especially, you know, given where we were maybe a year ago, that Columbus is going to be taking, and of course, we're not maybe thrilled about who LA Galaxy got. We're happy for him, not happy that he's going to be with LA, that being Guillermo Barrichello. But it's still that you've got Columbus winning the race to a guy, beating out LA Galaxy, LA for a coach. That's not something that you would have saw, I don't think, under the previous ownership or even, you know, back to the Hunts.
Well, and one thing on Giovinco that I just wanted to touch on, you know, we have kind of gone through a couple phases in terms of the marquee players as a league in history. I mean, when the league was first started, you had a couple players who were clearly well past their prime. Your kind of LP Bays in Miami, people like that in the very, very early days. And then you had a period where they weren't really any big name players. And then you had the signing of David Beckham in Los Angeles, which totally changed everything and kind of reset the level that every team was trying to go for. And you saw people try to emulate that style for a while. And then you had Bezpachenko with Toronto, who changed the game again and convinced Sebastian Giovinco, who, you know, you have to remember, was still getting minutes for Juventus. Mm-hmm. He was playing in the Champions League and convinced him to leave Italy and to leave, you know, Champions League football to go play in Canada for a team that had never really done anything. A team that had never made the playoffs, in fact. That's pretty impressive, just to be able to convince a guy to do that. And I know money talks, but it's more than money in a lot of these cases. So, you know, we had that period of time. And then you had, obviously, you know, Atlanta, where they started signing players like, you know, Joseph Martinez and Miguel Almiron and players of that caliber. But there's still a place for the Bezpachenko, you know, 20-somethings, you know, big name European player to come over here and get the job done. I wonder if we're going to see a signing like that straight out of the gate from this ownership group. I wonder if they're just going to do that to help kind of relaunch this team. I'm not sure they need to be honest with you. Nordeca's almost sold out season tickets. I think it was completely sold out, and then mysteriously like 20 more showed up on Ticketmaster the other day. But you know, I'm not sure we're going to need that, but I wonder if they're going to make some sort of a statement signing where they're going to go get some sort of big name guy. And you know,
we'll think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that you bring up the whole thing about possibly getting a signing like that, because it feels, at least from the way Garber talked about Bezbachenko and Caleb Porter, is that we are now getting into a situation in which MLS does not steer those big name Europeans away from Columbus. I don't know how accurate that might be, and we're not really going to know until there is a big name that's rumored to be coming to the U.S. or coming to MLS, and we see whether, you know, MLS allows whatever that big name is to come to Columbus. I really hope I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and that Garber has, in this whole process and the hirings and the, you know, metric ton of money that is now behind the team, that this becomes a more fair process. Mm-hmm. Is that a good way to say it?
I think so. And you look at, I mean, he's on the record now. Saving the crew is one of his top five, what, most memorable accomplishments? Or top three. Just imagining what the other two of those are. But it does
Atlanta
seem like,
and Toronto.
Yeah. That Don is, well, what about Seattle? You know, the original.
Oh, yeah, Seattle. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Seattle creating soccer had to be up there. But I think to your point though, Sam, it does seem very clear where Don Garber, you know, may have had his reservations about Columbus as a market in prior years. Of course, there's, I mean, a body of evidence that I think people can probably draw their own conclusions about whether to what extent his role was in the plans to move this team to Austin, if he was just, you know, a bystander versus complicit versus, you know, actually advancing it. Regardless, there seems to have been an about face from him, from the league as well, to the point where, you know, they paid to bring crew fans out to the MLS Super Draft last week. I think it's going to take, you know, myself included, it's going to take me some time before I'm ready to go and you know, welcome Don Garber into Nordec to sing some chants with us or anything like that. But they're making progress, and they're not going to be able to repair relationships overnight, but it seems very clear that they're adamant in doing so, and that, at least, I think, is very admirable.
Can I talk about Garber for a second? Because I think this whole idea is interesting, and I know that fans are gonna kind of have different takes about this. Everybody's gonna kind of go through this process differently, not only with Garber but also with Precourt. But I'm to the point now where I am already, and this is how good the Edwards Haslam ownership group is. I already don't care about either one. If I see Don Garber on the street tomorrow, I'm going to, you know, pat him on the shoulder and be like, Kamish, how's it going? You know, how about that crew? You know, I just don't care. I don't care about Precourt. He's going to announce the Austin thing tomorrow. I'm sure we're going to talk about it. I don't care. I just don't care. You know, their success is our success now. I just hope that they've learned their lesson. And I think this goes back to that idea about DPs being allowed to come to Columbus and stuff like that. What they did for the longest time is they basically said, okay, we're going to have one or two pet projects per season. We're going to funnel as much marketing money and as many top players to that team as humanly possible, try to build up that market at the expense of all the other ones. And Don Garber needs to understand, and the league needs to understand, they are not building teams, they're building a league. And when you do that and you only pick one or two teams per year, eventually you're going to leave some teams out, and those teams are going to suffer. You know, we almost lost our team last year. You have a lease agreement in Chester, Pennsylvania, that's going to be running out in a year or two. Philadelphia Union could very easily be under the axe, you know, before we know it. You know, rumors could start this season that maybe the team's looking to get out from their lease in Chester. You have weird lease agreements that are not working in Chicago, where you have fans who are suing the team, suing the people running the team. There are problems all over the league, and they need to understand that those teams need the marketing dollars probably more than Atlanta does, probably more than Los Angeles FC does. Maybe, you know, put Chicago on television a little bit more, even if the stands are going to be empty. Maybe that's the only way that you can make it so the stands aren't empty anymore. I hope that's one of the things that they take away from this whole thing is, you know, just because a team's been around a while doesn't mean you should neglect them. Because, yeah, it's on the fans a little bit to support the team, but it's also on the league to market their teams and on, you know, the team to market itself. And if you don't have committed ownership and if you don't have a committed league, you're not going to get very far.
So two things to address kind of what you said real quick, which tells me that I don't think that has clicked in their heads yet. When we talked about putting teams on national television, Garber quickly said that it's the networks that choose the games and not the league, which I'm like, all right, whatever. But also talking about what was the other thing that you just said? Oh, yeah, I don't think they've – oh, he said that that the crew was basically Precourt's only job. He wasn't working in anything else, and this was just a side thing, and that he really put his heart and soul into it and went out and marketed the team. And when he said that line, in my head I said, no, he didn't, because he didn't. He did not go out and market the team. And if he did, then he obviously did it wrong, like in a really, really bad wrong way. But he was probably following what he was told by MLS on how to do things, you know, and that obviously has not worked in a long time. So it'll be interesting to see how they let this new ownership work its marketing skills, work its marketing prowess within the state of Ohio, within the city of Columbus, possibly internationally. You know, we're talking about football money, which isn't Toronto owned by the company that owns Canadian CFL team?
Yes. Yeah, are they yes. MLSE?
TSN or MLSE?
Or yeah, I mean, some, are they're either yeah. TSN or Rogers.
Yeah,
one
something
or the
like
other.
That. But they have a Canadian Football League team.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we'll assume Canadian football money. But you know, so will they allow them to do it their way? You know, we didn't hear there was no price ticket increase for this year, was there?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing about one. So will they allow Columbus to finally have, like, not just be a follower of what the other teams do, but actually do its own thing and see how that can increase or, you know, how that works within this market?
Well, and I also think you have to consider how much influence Anthony Precourt had at these Board of Governors meetings and how much influence someone like Dee Haslam is going to have. You know, Dee Haslam is someone who is incredibly wealthy on her
own. Such a breath of fresh air, too.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, this is an NFL owners group. If you look around the league at who is pulling the strings in terms of the major decisions, it's the NFL owners. I have to think as soon as the Board of Governors found out that there was NFL ownership involved in this thing, the tune changed real quick. Mm-hmm. You probably had Arthur Blank picking up the phone saying, hey, Don, you need to fix this right now. You know, we need to get these guys in. So I think that if they have concerns, if they feel like they need things, they're going to go not only to Don Garber, but to the other owners and say, hey, we need this. And I think Don Garber in this whole situation has been kind of put back in his place mm-hmm. a little bit. I think that, you know, the more we find out about this whole thing, we're going to find out that Don Garber was not just somebody who was sitting idly by letting his owners do what they want. That's not how this league has operated ever. You know, Don Garber is intimately involved and aware of every major decision that happens. He definitely had some part to play in this thing. And at some point, either he realized or the other owners realized that this was not going well and they pulled the plug. And Don Garber had to, you know, eat a little crow. And so we'll see what happens. But I think that D. Haslam is going to be an amazing advocate for the city and for this team. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. As horrible as 2018 was, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, I am almost glad that it happened. I'm almost glad that all this happened. In fact, I am glad that it happened. I wish it could have happened a different way. But if the price we have to pay for D. Haslam and Pete Edwards is Anthony Precourt trying to destroy the team, you know, the next couple of years are going to pay that off. I cannot wait. It's going to be incredible. If you don't have your season tickets yet, by the way, just pause this podcast. Go buy them right now. They're going to sell out. You're not going to get a seat that's halfway decent. Get your tickets now. It's going to be crazy.
And if you don't have your season tickets when it comes to next year, you can almost bet your sweet bippy that they're going to tie season tickets in the new stadium mm-hmm. with some sort of season tickets in 2020. Mm-hmm. Or at least season ticket priority in the new stadium with some sort of season tickets in 2020.
Oh, I can't wait.
But also, D. Haslam, first female governor on the Board of Governors.
Yep.
Huge, huge. And she's going to be sitting next to, you know, Robert Kraft and all those other NFL owners that are involved. And she's already used to them. So mm-hmm. it's not like she's going to be coming in trying to figure out what to do.
Oh, yeah. And these guys talk, you know, all the time anyway. The one thing that was really interesting to me, and I think this might have been when they were announcing the stadium. I can't remember what event this was, but was it JW? It was somebody from the Browns organization had basically said, "Oh yeah, well we've been talking with Arthur Blank already about, you know, what he did to get his team going and their."
Yeah, JW said that at Land Grant.
Yeah, that's where it was, and you know was saying, you know, they were sharing a lot of their tips and tricks and stuff like that. These guys. The one benefit of single entity is that the teams that are really successful have an economic incentive to make the other teams in the league also really successful. So I think we're going to get the best of the best. We're going to have a great game plan. They're going to bring a bunch of sports biz people down from Cleveland to help get this thing going. They're going to hire smart, and it's going to be incredible. I'm really glad that they kept a lot of the people. Out of the people that we lost, I'm sad to see some of them go. I'm really sad to see Weston Applefeller go, by the way. That's the only person on that list. I was like, oh, man.
Biggest one on my list. Yeah, that's sad.
I would say hi to him. He would come by Nordeca almost every game and just kind of chat with me for a minute while they were getting the field set up because I'm always in there like an hour early. And he is just the nicest guy. They better freaking take good care of him down in Austin. Otherwise, I'm going to stop being nice to them. But it's, yeah. That was the only one, and they're going to bring in great people. It's just, I cannot tell you how stoked I am for it. Like, I'm just waiting for March. I don't care. We can sign nobody. We can tank next season. I don't care. The crew are saved. There's going to be a 2019 season. We have committed ownership who have been here from the beginning. It's going to be incredible. It is going to be so freaking good. How lucky are we? This is unbelievable. Best ownership group in the league.
Absolutely. It's thrilling. And I think, you know, one point we're going to move on, but we can't underscore it enough is, you know, the other part. And I think what Don Garber learned and what the rest of these folks learned and what this showed is that fans still have power in this league. Gates matter. And the fans have the power. That the fact is, the crew doesn't get. They certainly don't get saved. You need to have the potential owners, the Haslams, come in there, and Pete Edwards, and folks get it together. But if it weren't for fans, the people in Save the Crew that kept the light, kept it that spotlight shone on Garber, shone on the league, doing the reporting. You know, poking holes in the entire pre-court narrative, you know, you don't have a chance you don't know that Zach Klein or Attorney General at the time, now Governor Mike DeWine, are really take up that lawsuit. You certainly don't know that, you know, if I'm D and Jimmy Haslam, look, I don't know if I'm going to go and invest in this team unless I know I've got invested fans that aren't, you know, not only that they're going to show up, but they're going to work with us. And that's what's going to be so interesting, fascinating, and exciting to watch. what's possible with this team and with this fan base and ownership working together in concert. I mean, it is, you know, compared to being antagonists. And I think that's one of the things that has been a stark wake-up call for Don Garber and for the rest of the league, because if, you know, the Philadelphias, the Bridgeviews, you know, if they are thinking about going down that route, trying to relocate or anything like that, there's now a playbook too, to an extent, for fans. Now, I don't know if any other fan base can replicate it, what happened in Columbus. It is a unique city, unique fan base, unique situation, but there's at least now a blueprint, a playbook for how you fight back against this. And I think that is something that Don Garber realized, and the fact that they now, that you can't just treat your supporters groups, the fans, like an afterthought and just court the big name sponsors or the big markets, because the fans still have power. Anyway, I don't know if there were any other thoughts on that.
I was just going to let you drop the mic after that one.
They certainly do. But speaking of those fans, and you know, one of the recognition of that, and again, to the credit of Garber and co, was the fact that they brought fans out to the MLS Super Draft in Chicago last week. Now, I think there's, you know, some debate. You've got teams like FC Cincy, our new God. That's, I'm really looking forward to playing against Cincy. Just a sidebar, and just watching them just crash and burn in front of our eyes. That's going to be one of the other best parts of next year, along with Columbus Crew playing and winning and being the greatest team the world has ever seen. But you had the MLS Super Draft. Crew took, I believe they took some players in the later rounds in the subsequent days. One pick in the first round, picking J.J. Williams. J.J., I believe, is short for Josh Williams, a striker, and you know, all the fans there. But you know, good addition. Obviously, one of the things that we were harping on last year, the need for striker depth, Josh Williams seems to be a great kid who's got a, you know, good head on his shoulders. I haven't, you know, watched too much or done much more than YouTube scouting, so I'm not going to weigh in too much on him or the merits of that as a pick. I think, you know, it's fair also to look at, you know, how useful is the MLS Super Draft in 2019. But still, you know, exciting moment, and you still do see the Crew especially have found ways to find, you know, get some productive players, especially in the later rounds, frankly, in the last few years. But you look at the loss of Bubakars, Nico Hansens, Argadello, a lot of players that are contributing that were acquired through that draft, and hopefully, you know, Josh Williams might be another one.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting pick. I'm always cool with picking strikers. I think, you know, if they work out, cool. If not, you know, you have a backup in case you need a different look in a particular game. I've heard good things about him from people who saw him as a college player. But, yeah, I don't know a heck of a lot about him. I do think, in general, this team has lacked strikers with different abilities in recent years. So we would have, you know, two or three copies of the same kind of striker, and we would just kind of roll with that. He seems like he's kind of like a scrapper, someone who's is tough to defend and you know, can get into space and make stuff happen. And, you know, we'll see how things pan out. I'm curious to see how he plays in preseason. I'm sure they're going to give him minutes. But in general, it's the Super Draft. You get what you can. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, you can cut the player, or you can put them, you know, third in line in your depth chart. It's kind of a low risk, low reward, potentially low reward situation. But certainly have heard good things about him. Heard he was really nice with the fans at the draft, and definitely welcome him to the Crew.
Yeah, it's, you know, to be honest, I always say that, and that's my personal opinion, and y'all can disagree if you want to, but anything really past the first 10 or 15 rounds 10 or 15 picks in the MLS draft, the chance of them not being signed is significantly bigger than them actually being signed and or contributing to a Major League Soccer team. Now, occasionally you have, you know, a diamond in the rough that you can find here and there, and that's great. But I think the crew has struggled in the last few years to find what would be their prototypical striker, but having two of them on at the same time. And I think from what I've heard about Josh Williams, nice. See what
you're
just
going
now?
With that.
So, you know, it's like he's a big guy that can hold the ball, but also has, you know, good aim and good strength and good shot. So I'm you know, interested to see. But if it doesn't pan out, I'm not. You know, it's the MLS draft. I mean, for God's sake, the Philadelphia Union sold all of their MLS draft picks to FC Cincinnati for 150,000 Garber bucks. So, I mean, let if this tells you anything about how the Union feels about the MLS draft, I got nothing.
We also appreciate the fact that FC Cincinnati used their timeout, which also just the absurdity of having a timeout in a draft, but put that aside. They had the first overall pick, and they knew they were going to have the first overall pick. And they had all the time in the world to negotiate any deal or anything that they wanted to do, and they used the timeout on. I mean, that is some Pat Shurmur Browns stuff for those you know, poor Browns fans that are also listeners here.
I mean, maybe they were still entertaining offers, and they just didn't want to, you know, give their hand away or whatever.
Just if you don't know who you're picking or whether you're going to trade with the first overall pick, you don't. That, and that's, again, why I'm looking forward to just eating their lunch. It's going to be great.
See, I just think that they need to change the name. I think if they didn't call it the Super Draft, it wouldn't be such a joke. I think when you say something is super, it actually needs to be super. And if it's objectively not super, if it's just mediocre every single year, then just call it the draft or get rid of it. I am kind of to the point now where I think that kids coming out of college should just be free agents. Mm-hmm. The I can tell you the exact point at which the draft started to suck, and that was when you had homegrown players. As soon as you had somebody who spent 6 months in your academy getting tagged by a team, you know, every one of these players is going to get tagged by a team at that point. Anybody who is showing significant promise at a young age is going to get picked up by somebody because of the way the system works. You're going to want to nab that player and bring them through your system so that you can claim them. And if you're not doing that, you know, why not just pick them up out of college and be like, hey, kid, you want to join the crew? Here, you know, we'll put you on a rookie salary, move to Columbus, you're good. You know, and then the players can, you know, negotiate and be like, okay, well, Philadelphia Union's offering me more than a rookie salary. What do you got? I think it'd be better for the players. I think it'd be better for the league. You would have teams that actually want the player rather than being like, I guess we'll take this kid and see if it pans out. I don't know. I think that it's not doing a good job for our youth. It's not doing a good job for the league. It's this big spectacle that is very anticlimactic every single time. It's just, it's a weird thing.
It's so big that they do its third and fourth rounds via conference call 3 days later.
Yeah, and then everybody passes. You had, like, LA Galaxy had two picks. They were just like, well, we're going to pass all of our picks for these rounds. Like, we don't care.
Well, and there's one big thing that we forgot to mention about
the crew pass too.
Yeah, there's one big thing we forgot to mention about Josh Williams is that he is a Generation Adidas player. So they're probably going to keep him because his salary doesn't count.
Yeah.
Against the salary cap, and he's basically like a free player, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of like a weird holdover from the previous era where you needed these players to actually get picked on teams and get minutes. But I'm curious to see if the Generation Adidas thing is even going to stick around. I would kind of get rid of that as long as
they still have a contract with Adidas, that thing is staying.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, and they've got this pipeline now, so it's possible that they'll keep that. But I don't know. I think the whole draft, the whole, you know, player selection process needs to be completely overhauled. I think that they need to get rid of the expansion draft. In fact, there was an interesting interview that Precourt and Lockbane had earlier today in Austin, and Lochner basically said, you know, the market for soccer players is global. We're not, you know, super interested in an expansion draft. So I'm not sure that even the teams that are joining the league at this point really care that much. They are going to be getting their talent from elsewhere. They are going to be following more of the Atlanta model of, you know, get players from other countries who are promising, pay them more just on the basis that they're not earning that much in their countries that they're currently residing in, and, you know, build a team that way. I think that's going to be the future. I think it's time to, you know, can the draft, at least can the name Superdraft at the bare minimum, please. It's not well, super.
And you know, to your point, Sam, Crew did pick up a couple players over the conference call earlier today. A couple midfielders, Justin Donowa from Dartmouth University and Raphael Metzingen out of Valparaiso. I probably mispronounced both of those. But both a pair of midfielders. Donowa scored 10 goals over 52 matches in the Ivy League, first team all Ivy League selection last year. And then Metzinga, a Brazilian. So Brazilian with Metzinga, and Donowa is from Bermuda. And Metzinga scored 11 goals in 34 games for Valparaiso. He played at Bryan College before that. Don't know too much about any of them. It'll be interesting to see. And again, the Crew have, you know, unearthed a couple gems in the late rounds, in recent years. So, and again, Tim Bezbachenko, guy seems to know what he's doing. Caleb Porter too. And Porter, certainly a guy who's got a lot of experience, with NCAA soccer. So, willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, and it'll be interesting to see with them. Another note at the draft and, you know, an area where I think, we need to also give some credit to Don Garber, as much as that pains me sometimes. But an announcement and a little bit more solemn, that the Coach of the Year award will now be named after Siggy Schmidt, former Columbus Crew coach, also with the national team and LA Galaxy most recently, who passed away kind of between the recording of our last podcast. So certainly our thoughts with Siggy's family, but I think a very fitting tribute for MLS. Hard to think of, you know, any MLS coaches or managers that have contributed more to the league than the big man.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and Siggy's a legend, and certainly won't be forgotten here. Won't be forgotten in Seattle. They had a lot of really great tributes for him as well. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, a really important coach in the development of this league. Someone who's been around, it feels like forever. You look at the number of trophies that he's won at MLS level and also at the collegiate level, and it's crazy. And definitely someone who was well respected by the players, which is important. And so I think it's a fitting tribute to him. It'll keep his memory alive for a long time, not just in Columbus, but around the league. You know, he'll never be forgotten here. You know, he's an incredibly important figure in Crew history. But it's good to see him being recognized by the league as a whole as well.
It would be really nice to see. Well, I don't think they would do two names in a row or two names in the same event, but it would be really nice to see Siggy Schmidt and Guillermo Barrascaloto up in the Circle of Honor sometime this year. You know, especially maybe around when Ziggy or when Guillermo's here. Since we do play LA at home this year.
Oh, that is going to be a huge, and yeah, we do have, you know, the schedule out and released. We've got multiple games, you know, at home in August, three games in August. I mean, that's pretty wild. We didn't see too much of that last year.
Three games in March.
Yeah.
And three games in April, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Again. Yeah. But with the schedule, I mean, you have to think, I don't even know who actually did the scheduling, because, I mean, was that, you know, old regime kind of, is there, you know, doing the horse trading for that schedule, but they still managed, even if it was, you know, Andy Lochnain or just kind of like the default or whatever, and they didn't even, you know, fight for any other dates, they still managed to get a better schedule than they had last year. And, you know, not having the whole a cloud of, you know, is the team going to go? Is this going to be their last season? I don't want to give money to Anthony Precourt, you know, over people's heads. I think that's just going to do a lot for making for a much more robust home field environment and advantage in 2019. That's definitely going to be a little bit of a different experience at Moffrey Stadium next year, huh?
It's going to feel like we're playing a lot of games in a short time. I mean, if you think about it, they really compressed the schedule down by about a month.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not running into the quarter horse actually almost at all, because the quarter horse is in October, right?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
I believe so. So now all of a sudden you're avoiding the quarter horse altogether, unless you have a playoff game, and then it's one game playoffs. It's not home and away. You're not guaranteed that you are going to have a playoff game if you get past the first round, because now it's all single elimination. So yes, to a certain degree, I'm almost like, no, I'm okay with you know, one or two maybe extra Wednesday games that were not there before. I'm fine with that. Now the players might disagree because of wear and tear on their body, but hey, you know, it is what it is.
Definitely is, and you know, cannot wait for Christmas 2019. It's gonna be a incredible day. You know, anything else, kind of, guys? I know we wanted to kind of keep this short. You know, everyone's been, yeah, you've missed us, and we'll be checking in a little bit closer to the season. Anything else we want to touch on before I'm going to ask you guys what your crew's resolutions are? That's right. Or what's something that the crew need to do in 2019? I don't know, something to that effect. But anything else we want to touch on before we wrap this up?
Are we doing the resolutions now? Because I already know what mine is.
If that, then we will. Yep. What is that going to be, Alex?
Okay, so mine is to start more dumb rumors, and the rumor I'm going to start right now, Gonzalo Higuain is leaving AC Milan for Chelsea in the next few days for about $30 million. If he flops at Chelsea, I'm not saying he's going to, but if he flops at Chelsea, he's probably on the market this summer. And I'm not saying that having the Higuain brothers together in Columbus, Ohio is going to happen in like August. I'm just saying there's a chance. So, you know, keep that on your radar.
Ooh, I like it.
I'm making it up. The radar
we're going with it. We're going with it. Just heard it here on the Massive Report podcast, which is associated with a reputable journalistic outlet.
Yeah.
SB Nation is putting their full faith and confidence behind this and behind Alex Stanek's sources.
Just like
that
they
Gonzalo Higuain is coming to Columbus Crew this summer.
The same sources that produced the completely accurate Miroslav Klose at a Columbus Crew report, and the Falcao report, which was picked up by national and international media outlets. Gonzalo Higuain, let's make it happen. Why not? Why not? Let's dare to dream. You know, we have new ownership. Let's go crazy. Higuain, let's do it.
I like it. Sam, what is your resolution, or what do you think Crew's resolution should be for 2019?
I think Crew's resolution is really to see people come out and support, you know? The results on the field are going to be, new coach, new ownership, new style, new system, new GM/business person, which actually, I'm going to circle back to that here in a second. But come out and support and enjoy. This is something that literally a year ago we did not think was going to have. And by the time Christmas comes around, it'll be a time where we thought that might be the last opening, that might be the last Christmas in Columbus. So come out and enjoy. But two real quick things that are unrelated. Actually, I'll let you do your resolution
first.
No, go
now because I need to think of mine.
Oh, well, fine, you slacker. So one thing that did come up is that Pat Onstad is staying in Columbus. He is staying. He's going to be part of Tim Bezbachenko's staff. They haven't decided what exactly he's going to be doing, but Pat Onstad is staying in Columbus. So that's one. Number two, this is one of those weird little things that we didn't expect before, but the team shop was open on Saturday from 10 to 3, and they were having probably one of the most absurd sales I've ever seen, which was buy one, get one free on the gold kits, authentic and replicas. So you could get two authentic kits for the price of one authentic kit, which basically comes to about I want to say it was almost a 35% discount, 35 to 40% discount. So it was basically, $150 off of an authentic kit. That's pretty nice. But I think, and as our friend Colin on Massive Report had mentioned, there's a good possibility that we do still get a new kit, at least a new yellow this year. And my prediction that in 2021 we'll get a new home and away, or, what do they call it? Regular and alternative. Mm-hmm. Primary and alternative. That's so.
And a new home stadium.
Well, of course.
I'll be excited,
well,
too.
Well, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, we'll see. And we'll have more to talk on that. Should be breaking ground this summer. Yeah. We'll see.
And if they do break ground, we will be there to cover it.
Absolutely. For what it's worth, my crew year's resolution is to be a little bit more serious and realistic with my predictions for, each game. And so, I'll start now. Harrison Offal's only going to score 10 goals this year, and the Crew are going to go undefeated. Only 10. I think that's pretty measured for me. But that's what we're going to do this year. Looking forward to it, guys. Looking forward to getting back on board. We'll probably be back, in mid to late February with some lead-up for Christmas Eve. Any parting shots before we step away until then?
Oh, man, I just want to take my time to say thank you to Pete Edwards and D. Haslam and Alex Fisher for being absolute superheroes. I cannot wait. Oh, my goodness. It's 2019 is going to be incredible. I can't even put it into words. I just smile thinking about it.
Absolutely.
I completely agree with Alex, but I will throw this. It is a new year, and Massive Report Podcast is looking for new sponsors. So if you are interested in sponsoring Massive Podcast, go ahead and drop us a line at massivereport@gmail.com, and we could start a discussion.
That's a good point. You can be a sponsor just like the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group, LLC, the first official new sponsor of the Massive Report Podcast for 2019. And you can learn more about the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls at gcgbag.com. They're the folks that brought you Gumbino. Yeah, that's right. The person in the Gumby costume and the Don Garber chant. Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls. Official sponsor of the Massive Report Podcast.
That was good. I love it. It's like you rehearsed that or something.
it just flows up, and I'm not even familiar with these guys, the supporters group, but they seem like really upstanding lads and lasses.
Well, they do definitely up the lads. We know that much.
They up them so hard.
We need another scarf run, though, because it's maybe the best scarf in crew history. Definitely top three. I think they're sold out, and I need one.
I'll pass that along if I know anybody there in that mystery organization.
I appreciate that.
But certainly, and then, yeah, guys, gcgback.com if you're interested. MassiveReport.com, though, to stay up to date with all the crew news between now and then. And until we return, fellas, it is a pleasure as always. Alex, Sam, for them, this is Bart signing off. Bye, buddies.